Today, the Supreme Court hears arguments in two cases with major implications for whether race can be used as one factor in college admissions. The cases look at race-conscious admissions programs at the University of North Carolina and Harvard. The court has upheld similar programs in the past, but the court's new conservative 6-3 supermajority could end the practice, reversing decades of precedent. Emily Bazelon is a senior research scholar at Yale Law School and a staff writer for the New York Times Magazine. Welcome, Emily.
Hey, Deepa. Thanks for having me.
So, Emily, in a minute, we're going to take a closer look at the group Students for Fair Admissions and the man behind it. But this group has sued Harvard and the University of North Carolina. What's their argument?
Their argument is that under the Constitution and then also a federal statute that impacts universities that receive public money, that it's not allowed for universities to take race into account as one factor among many in admissions, that the universities should have absolutely race-neutral policies for their admissions, which is not how Harvard or UNC do it currently based on previous Supreme Court precedents.
I think it's important to point out, we've said it, but it's one factor. It's not the only factor that these colleges use. What do Harvard and North Carolina say about their admissions practices and whether these discriminate against Asian Americans?
Yeah, it is important. So the way that these universities do admissions is they call it holistic. They look at the full package the student presents. And the students who are at issue here, I think it's important to say, are strong students who tend to do very well at these universities. And so it's not as if they are necessarily pulling from a pool where these students would not be qualified to get in. It's more that they're looking at a lot of qualified students and then considering race is one factor among many because they want to have student bodies that reflect the racial composition of America, that have diversity. And this is the way that they can get to that place.
And I imagine that's exactly the argument they'll be making today before the Supreme Court. But tell us how the court has ruled about affirmative action in the past and how that might impact what will happen today.
In the past, the court has allowed this kind of holistic admissions process to go forward. But the court has put an important limit on the rationale universities can use. The court has said that diversity and its benefits for everyone at a university is the only permissible rationale. In other words, remedying past historic discrimination against certain groups like Black people based on the legacy of slavery, that is not constitutionally permissive according to the court's current rules. And I think that is a kind of conundrum for the universities because in a lot of ways, this problem of rectifying historic injustice is central to how we think of programs like affirmative action. But legally speaking, it's off the table.
We just have a few seconds. 40% of colleges do consider race as one factor in admissions. If the court ends their ability to do this, what's the implications?
It could really dramatically reshape how universities do admissions and mean that there'll be many fewer Black and Latino students at these schools.
Emily Bazelon is a senior research scholar at Yale Law School and a staff writer for the New York Times Magazine. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.
And we want to look now at the conservative activists behind the group Students for Fair Admissions, which sued Harvard and the University of North Carolina. His name is Edward Bloom. He spoke with NPR's Nina Totenberg.
What is happening on college campuses today is that applicants are treated differently because of their race and ethnicity. Some are given thumbs up, some are given thumbs down.
Bloom fines plaintiffs on cases challenging affirmative action. He recently started a group targeting diversity efforts on corporate boards. Our next guest describes him as a one-man legal factory, trying to, quote, erase racial preferences from American life. Anamona Harder-Collis is a national correspondent for the New York Times. She's profiled Bloom. She's in New York. Anamona, welcome.
Thank you, Deepa. Glad to be here.
So you've reported that Bloom has orchestrated more than 24 lawsuits challenging affirmative action and also voting rights across the country. Now, he's a financial advisor. He does not have a law degree. So start from the beginning. How did Bloom get involved in these cases?
Right. He ran for Congress in the 1990s, the early 90s, in Texas, his home state, as a Republican, and lost. And traveling around his district campaigning, he told me, he realized that it was very oddly shaped and decided that it was racially gerrymandered and joined a group of plaintiffs who argued that the districting system in Texas at that point was unconstitutional. And this case went to the Supreme Court and they won, which was highly motivating for him.
So how does he find plaintiffs who he believes would make a good case for the Supreme Court, especially to take up?
He reads the papers a lot and he cold calls. He has a kind of an eagle eye for these sorts of cases, even though he's not a lawyer. He has audited law courses, by the way.
You also write in your article about one mayor of a city in Southern California who felt like he had, quote, a gun to his head, and he was really upset about state law forcing him to redo his voting districts that Bloom jumped on.
Yeah, that was a case of Edward Bloom reading the paper and finding a situation that he responded to. He has a longstanding interest in voting districts and what he sees as gerrymandering to favor people of a certain race, candidates of a certain race, and voters of a certain race. So he called that mayor of Poway, California, and recruited him to join a lawsuit.
And aside from voting districts, Edward Bloom also has an interest in affirmative action. We mentioned that his group sued Harvard and the University of North Carolina in the cases before the Supreme Court today. But can you tell us more about his role in getting these cases to the court?
Right. So you mentioned that he's behind many cases. And impressively, these are the seventh and eighth cases of his to get to the Supreme Court. So Harvard is a case where he has recruited students who were denied, Asian American students who were denied admission to Harvard, for a case that argues that Harvard didn't admit qualified Asian American students and eliminated them using a system of personal ratings that relied on racial stereotyping. Harvard, of course, says it doesn't discriminate and also at the same time says that it does use some racially conscious admissions processes because it is looking for a diverse student body.
So when these cases come before the Supreme Court today, would it be fair to say perhaps that without Bloom, these cases may not have made it all the way to the Supreme Court?
I think it would be fair to say that without Bloom, these cases might not have been brought. He's a legal strategist and has been very successful at spotting and organizing cases and recruiting defendants and finding donors to conservative causes and sticking with the cases until they make it through the court system.
You know, it's interesting because your own reporting shows, you know, he is Jewish and his family has faced discrimination themselves. Can you describe how that shaped him?
Yes, he says that his early experience growing up in the South with anti-Semitism was a strong force in his life and inculcated in him the idea that people should not be, as he puts it, helped or hurt by something like the color of their skin. So his father was a traveling salesman, and he remembers that his father and also the family, when they went on vacation, were not allowed to stay in certain motels because of discrimination against Jews. And he also tells an interesting story about a bomb threat against his family's synagogue and his synagogue asking a nearby church to help put together a citizens group to defend against the bomb threat, and the church refusing until his father feisty guy, obviously, called in a bomb threat to the church. So he's inherited this kind of fighting spirit, but also this sense of injustice.
Mm. And I wondered what he says to the criticism that he's trying to stop efforts to help oppressed minorities overcome racism by improving opportunities. Did you ask him that?
Yes, he's very clear about it. He believes that there are race-neutral policies that could arrive at the same result, and he is not trying to stop Black or Latino or other minority group students from being admitted to top-flight institutions or any institution.
Well, we'll be watching the Supreme Court arguments carefully. Anamona Hartakolos is a national correspondent for The New York Times. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks, Deepa.